You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Award-winning documentary filmmakers Hemal Javedi and Muhammad Ali Naqvi have made a number of films that reveal the untold stories of Pakistan. Their latest, Among the Believers, is about the increase in political and religious turmoil in Pakistan since the War on Terror, with a particular focus on the Red Mosque and its network of madrasas in Islamabad and the countryside that instruct their children to engage in jihad. The film opens at the Cinema Village this Friday, and I'm very pleased to welcome Hemal Javedi and Muhammad Ali Naqvi to our show.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
The both of you have been making documentary films about Pakistan, but is this the first time you've worked together?
Well, this is my second documentary on Pakistan. I'm an Indian, so I don't have that much access to Pakistan as Muhammad does. But we've worked on two projects. This is the second one.
And is the fact that you are a Hindu from Mumbai a factor in the way this film is perceived in Pakistan?
I don't believe so. I think it has nothing to do with my nationality or religion. But it's just this political nature of this film that this film is banned.
How did you, and we'll get to the banning in a little bit, how did you learn about these schools?
Well, this is technically my second film on madrasas. And it's something, you know, I grew up in Pakistan. So madrasas are a really similar thing. You can describe them as Islamic seminaries, religious schools. They've existed in Pakistan throughout. And I made another documentary several years ago.
Didn't the Taliban grow out of madrasas?
Several of them. I wouldn't say the entire organization grew out of madrasas,
but Taliban a lot of students. Them.
Yes, a lot of the students that in the Taliban over the last several years did, in fact, get their training and stuff from various madrasas.
What is the Soviet-Afghan war? What role does it play in this story?
The Soviet-Afghan war was one of the few instances on a larger global scale in which Pakistan and Saudi Arabia and the United States came together and decided to use proxy fighters, training militant jihadists to go wage jihad in Afghanistan against the godless Soviets, as you know it was branded then. And this was such an effective tool that the Pakistani state kind of continuing adopting that in its other geostrategic conflicts. And because of that, our society in Pakistan has become a lot more extremist and intolerant.
You open your film with a scene of a small boy pledging a jihadist promise to Allah. He's a student at one of the Red Mosque schools. How many of those schools are there in Pakistan?
So the Red Mosque Madrasa Network has about 20 schools.
They live in seminaries?
Yeah, yes. And they have about 10,000 students. Most of them are in and around Islamabad and northern Pakistani areas.
How did the children end up in these schools?
Well, you know, the person who runs the Red Mosque, Maulana Abdulaziz, says that he fills the vacuum that the government has left behind, which is, you know, he provides them with food and provides them with shelter. And most of these children are from very impoverished regions. Most of them are from war-torn areas of Kashmir and the tribal areas. And the parents of these children, actually they see these madrasas as free daycare and free school for their children. And they do not really understand what the children are actually learning at these madrasas.
Aren't the schools government-funded?
Some of the madrasas are government-funded. And I should point out here that, you know, when I say madrasas, there's a whole wide variety of madrasas. Just because we say a madrasa doesn't immediately mean that there's training going on here for militants or recruiting for the Taliban. That's not the case. The Red Mosque, of course, is certainly one of those more militant and notorious madrasas. But, you know, there's officially 30,000 madrasas all across Pakistan and 100,000 unofficially.
And what led to the siege of the Red Mosque?
So in 2007, so right after 9/11, let me start from the beginning. Right after 9/11, George Bush told Pakistan that you are either with us or we will nuke you to the Stone Age. And the then president, President Musharraf, General Musharraf, vowed to removing, you know, the safe havens for the terrorist networks, such as the Taliban, within Pakistan. And he started attacking, like he started this attacks on madrasas. And for the longest time, these madrasas were indeed supported partially by certain elements of Pakistani government. So the madrasas were like, wait a minute, you were supporting us and now you are out here to shut us down. What do you mean? What are you trying to do? And Red Mosque was one of those madrasas who especially, particularly, like, was against President Musharraf. He said, this is not right. You cannot attack us and you cannot shut us down. And so, you know, because the Red Mosque was so defiant, President Musharraf eventually ordered a siege of the Red Mosque. And the Red Mosque was leveled, was destroyed, and it led to the death of one of the head clerics, which was the brother of Maulana Abdulaziz Ghazi. Maulana Abdulaziz Ghazi also lost his mother, his only son, and he also lost 130 of his students. So the aftermath of the Red Mosque is basically a byproduct of this vendetta that he was holding in his heart.
I mean, but you shoot inside the Red Mosque, so it's been rebuilt, or have they just moved to another location?
No, it's been rebuilt, and in fact, their madrasa, the Jamia Hafsa, which was the girls' division of the madrasa, that has been relocated to a government grant that was kind of given to Maulana Abdulaziz during the last government, during President Zardari's term, where they got about 10, 15 times the original allotment, just in a different area. And it's been rebuilt too, of course, because of private donations. And so that did happen. I did want to add, actually, that the siege of the Red Mosque is one of those very polarizing events that happened in my country. It would be unfair to just characterize that it split the country in half, you know, moderates on one side, more conservative right-wingers on the other. That's not the case, because there's a huge spectrum that kind of falls in between.
Well, and you try to cover a bit of that in this film.
Yes, but what was important to note is that so many people were against the war on terror and for the Pakistani state to, you know, join this. And they all had their different reasons, of course. And when the siege of the Red Mosque happened, the students had taken to the streets, they had begun their protesting, and some of it had turned violent, where they had, you know, kidnapped police officers, they destroyed government property, they had attacked, you know, CD shops, burning them, and they had kind of begun this campaign of moral vigilantism, because they wanted Sharia law to come in place. And it was kind of like this prolonged period that went through, where the government tried to negotiate with the Red Mosque and its students to calm down, until eventually what happened was that the siege took place.
My guests are Muhammad Ali Naqvi and Hemal Javedi. Their film, Among the Believers. You mentioned the girls' school. Are the boys and girls taught differently? Because you follow two kids here, a boy and a girl.
Yeah. So, yes, they are taught differently. Sometimes there is boys' madrasa and the girls' madrasa in the same complex, but they definitely are segregated, and the teachers are different, and everything is different.
We even see a scene in which the imam comes through the halls and says all the girls should cover up because a man is present. Yes. One of the kids you follow, Zarina, tries to leave.
So I found Zarina in 2009. In 2009, we actually did not plan to make a film on the Red Mosque. Yeah. It all happened by an accident. I actually wanted to, you know, make a film on the division within the education system in Pakistan, not knowing that it would be the Red Mosque. And so I went to this school that was funded by a village chief, a small school in northern Punjab, northern north to Islamabad. And I saw Zarina in one of the assemblies, the class assembly, the morning prayers. And I was just stunned by her beauty. She was so gorgeous, and she was so young, and she was just effusing so much energy, and her eyes were sparkling, that I was so drawn to her. And I asked her, what is her background? And she said that 2 weeks ago, she just escaped from a madrasa. And just out of curiosity, I said, which madrasa? And she said, the Red Mosque. I was like, what is Red Mosque? I did not even know what Red Mosque was at that time. So I went home, I went to the hotel, and I, you know, Googled it, and I read about it on Wikipedia, and I was like, oh my God, she escaped from this madrasa, and I knew that she was going to be the character of my film.
Variety called your access to Abdulaziz, the ISIS-supporting leader of these schools, unprecedented. How did you get access to him? Does he want the world to know that his goal is to institute Sharia law in Pakistan?
Oh, I'd say he's definitely very open and vocal about that.
But wasn't Sharia law already instituted in Pakistan under Zia-ul-Haq?
I think that there are certain components of Sharia law that might exist within the legal framework of, let's just say, the Shariat courts. But to make the Shariat law as the main and final law of Pakistan rather than British common law, I don't think that's happened, obviously. We don't have a caliphate, for example. And as far as the access is concerned, I mean, this was such a long process. I mean, Himal and I and our entire team, I mean, our partnership was like 6 years, so, you know. It was something that eventually grew. The first time we met Maulana Aziz, I remember it was a very terrifying experience. And I remember speaking to Himal from Pakistan that we have this opportunity to meet the head imam. And this is back in 2010. And, you know, as a filmmaker, as a journalist, part of you is scared that, you know, should I do this? But then you're also kind of excited to tell the story.
But this is a dangerous story to tell. Haven't people been killed? And didn't you receive death threats?
Yes. But I must tell you that this was, of course, 5-6 years before I ever received those death threats. So in retrospect, though, I'm still glad I did it, because I want my country to change, and I want, you know, Pakistan to function like any other well-functioning democratic country where we have respect for all creeds and tolerance and progressive. And so that was my, you know, quest of why I wanted to join Himal in making this film. I think that was very important. How I gained that access was that it was the long waiting game. I had to make my own relationship with Maulana Aziz. I had to meet him at a common playing field where we could interact. And for me, you know, he's a preacher, so I had genuine questions about my own faith and spirituality. And that's how we first started. And once I was able to gain his trust there, I was able to cover the rest of the ground that you see.
And he's obviously very proud of what he's doing. He believes in what he's doing. What are they teaching these kids? Are they teaching them math and science and how to read Urdu? Or are they teaching them how to conduct jihad?
In some madrasas, they do teach them math and science. I don't think they teach English, but they teach math, science, and social studies. But everything, all the textbooks are sort of from the point of view of the religion. So, for example, the science textbook would have verses like, you know, hydrogen and oxygen combined to form water only if Allah wishes.
Hmm. Yeah.
And so everything is taught from a religious perspective. But the madrasa that Talha, one of the characters in our film, attends, is they only teach them how to memorize Quran in Arabic, the language that they do not even know about.
Now, the film has been banned in Pakistan. Why would it be banned in Pakistan, which is, at least in theory, a secular country?
Well, according to the Film Censor Board of Pakistan, which banned us earlier this year, their language is that this film is basically undermining the Pak country's attempt at fighting extremism and terrorism. And this film basically undermines that process, which I find very ironic, because just today, the Pakistani courts dismissed a first incident report of a case, basically, that was registered against Maulana Aziz and his students for aligning with Daesh, and in which they recorded a video testimony.
What we call ISIS here.
Yes, Islamic State. ISIS, in which they said that we want Baghdadi to come to Pakistan to take over and establish his caliphate. And the students of the Red Mosque endorsed and said this message on video. Maulana Aziz endorsed it, and the Pakistani courts dismissed this plea. They said they didn't take it seriously. They felt that it was basically Maulana Aziz just trying to get attention. Now, what I find shocking about this is that here you have someone openly admitting and countering the state, wanting ISIS to take over Pakistan, and yet they ban our film. So this kind of mixed messaging is what I want to hold my government accountable for. And it's very sad for us as Pakistanis and as Muslim filmmakers that our film cannot be shown in Pakistan, and it is our intention to appeal that.
And there's been a change.org petition to appeal the Pakistani government's decision. Do you think it's likely to succeed?
We have endorsements from IDEA, from Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and we are trying to mobilize other organizations to support our plea. You know, it's a long shot. I mean, I'm not very hopeful about the plea succeeding, but Mohammed is very optimistic.
You would think that the government would have a different attitude in the light of the what happened in 2014 when 145 people, mostly children, were murdered in a school attack in Peshawar.
You would think that, wouldn't you? And it's just heartbreaking that we still don't have our narrative clear. Look, it's also unfair for me to paint my entire government or our military with one brushstroke. I don't think that's the case, because there's several fissures within our own government and our own leaders. But, you know, I guess change, real sustainable change, is long term. And if we're coming from this paranoid militaristic sensibility where our governments have always used these proxy fighters to kind of use against, you know, India or our other enemies, then that policy, to change that, takes time, I guess. And have I seen change happen? Yeah, I can be optimistic and say it certainly has. I mean, after the 2014 attack, civil society groups in Pakistan did suddenly come out and start openly condemning the Taliban. And that is something that wasn't so open before, because people were scared. I'm not saying that it was that is still maintained, but it's the fact that it happened was, you know, genuinely an optimistic step.
But isn't that fear also the reason that even before the government banned the film, most of the movie outlets in Pakistan refused to show it?
Well, we never tried to get distribution in Pakistan prior to that. But I want to add something to what Mohammed said. It's that people were not just scared, but they were in denial. Because people always blamed the outside forces. Until 2014, they always said, oh, it's the U.S. or it's Israel who's conducting these attacks on our soil, but it just cannot be us. And it was in 2014 where there was a shift in collective consciousness, where people said, it is us, and it is our responsibility. And at least certain fragments of the society said that we must uproot this extremism, otherwise it will destroy us from within.
Among the Believers has been shown in 50 film festivals in 25 countries and 5 continents. I can't remember how many top awards for best documentary, but quite a few. And it is opening this Friday at the Cinema Village here in New York, and then on October 7th in Los Angeles and other theaters around the country. What do you hope that Western audiences will get from seeing this film?
Well, I actually want to take off from a point that Himmel was actually saying, and this takes me back to when I first joined her and she approached me for this project. We certainly have, as a society in Pakistan, been in denial, but there have been several voices from long ago saying that this is our problem, we have to be held accountable. And Himmel, when she first approached me, you know, it was so easy to make this film into a polemic on Islam and just feature crazy, you know, clerics who are espousing jihad, but that wasn't the case. we actually also featured voices like Tariq, the village chief, in our film. Dr. Pervez Hoodboy, Zarina, you know, these were our other voices, other Muslims who are Muslims themselves, who are some of the biggest victims of terror. And they themselves are using grassroots solutions to counter this militancy. That was so amazing, because in the field that I'm in nonfiction and documentaries, you never get to see that story. It's always some Western group that's coming in as some savior. And that's not the case when, you know, we ourselves are fighting this extremism. And I think that's what I wanted Westerns to take away, is that don't just look at Muslims as one big wide brushstroke. The other big thing I would say is demagogues and the danger, even one supported like Maulana Aziz in his small, how they can take root and suddenly become so powerful. And I think it's interesting, you know, you're going through election in this country at this time, where you have Trump, in my opinion, who is like the Aziz of the United States to some degree, you know. I don't know if you wanted to.
Well, I don't know whether he's taken over a madrasa. He just seems to have an awful lot of hotels. I have to end it here, unfortunately, but thank you both so much for being on our show, Muhammad Ali Naqvi and Himal Trivedi. Their film, Among the Believers, which, as I told you earlier, is opening at the Cinema Village this Friday.